Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York voters will vote on a ballot measure in November that proponents say will, quote, enshrine abortion in the state's constitution. But not all legal experts agree it's that simple. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
When we fight, we win. When we fight, we win. We're gonna win, y'all.
On a soggy morning in Warrior's Park in Poughkeepsie, Democrats like New York Attorney General Letitia James and Congressman Pat Ryan from the 18th District are speaking out in support of Proposition 1, also called the New York Equal Rights Amendment. The state constitution already shields New Yorkers from discrimination based on race, color, religion, and creed, but Prop 1 would expand those categories to include sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, ethnicity, national origin, age, disability, pregnancy, and pregnancy outcomes, including abortion. Here's James.
We've got to flip the ballot over and vote for Prop 1 because a lot of people think we're in a safe state, but we can't take that for granted, and that's too much of a gamble.
Abortion is legal in New York for any reason up to 24 weeks of pregnancy. The vote on Prop 1, regardless of the outcome, won't change that. The proponents say the amendment would make it harder for state lawmakers to restrict the procedure in the future, as has happened in several states since the Supreme Court's reversal of Roe v. Wade in 2022. Democrats have been leaning into the issue of abortion rights, in part to mobilize their base in campaigns ever since. Some Republican candidates have been doing the same by attacking Prop 1, claiming its protections for gender identity would encourage transgender students to play on girls' sports teams, something that's already allowed in New York, and allow minors to pursue gender-affirming surgery without their parents' consent, something that isn't. Vincent Bonventry of Albany Law School says Prop 1 would do neither of those things, but he doesn't think it will enshrine abortion either, at least not on its own. Bonventry says the bill's language does not explicitly list abortion as a fundamental right for New Yorkers. It simply says you can't face discrimination for getting one.
It does not preclude legitimate restrictions on abortion. And so, for example, if we get a conservative Republican administration in the governor's office, and they control the Assembly and the Senate, there's nothing to stop them under this proposition in the state constitution, nothing to stop them from enacting legislation that pretty severely restricts a woman's right to choose.
Cameron McDonald with the Empire Center for Public Policy says how Prop 1 is interpreted will ultimately depend on the New York Court of Appeals, as state laws, past, present, and future, face legal challenges.
If it passes, I think it's going to be sort of open season in the courts, challenging laws and so on.
This is something McDonald worries about. If so many classes of people are elevated to a protected status, how might the court decide in cases where they conflict with one another, like religion and sexual orientation? McDonald says it's too soon to know for sure, but he wagers the courts could play an increasing role in the state's culture wars as a result.
We're going to have court-made civil rights policies in New York that will depend on who has the resources and the desire to bring litigation and obtain the results that they want.
Bonventry agrees Prop 1 would create significant work for the court, but he doesn't consider that a bad thing. After all, many of the constitutional rights Americans cherish have been hashed out in court. Ultimately, if the court is forced to decide on legislation that two classes disagree on, he imagines the decision will come down to, is this law reasonable? Because even if you're constitutionally protected from discrimination, the court's answer to that question might still be yes, depending on how the law is tailored and whether it finds a compelling state interest. And that, again, is part of why Bonventry says Prop 1 will not enshrine abortion. He sees nothing in the amendment that would prevent a one-day conservative state government from passing restrictions on the procedure.
It depends upon who's in the legislature, who's in the governor's office, and who is on the Court of Appeals. No way of getting around that.
Back at the rally, speakers urge attendees to grab yard signs and vote blue down the ballot. Poughkeepsie resident Katie Height says she'll be voting for Prop 1, and she wants to ensure her friends and loved ones know what's at stake as well.
I actually grew up in Texas, and I'm watching what's going down, you know, on down there very closely. So I'm a big fan of shoring up our rights in the state of New York to ensure that we protect a woman's, well, everyone's right to choose.
Mimi Timuraju, president and CEO of the advocacy group Reproductive Freedom for All, says make no mistake, this election will come down to abortion rights. 21 states have banned or heavily restricted the procedure since 2022, and there are ballot measures in 10 states this November.
Nebraska has, like, competing ballot measures, and whichever ballot measure gets the most votes is the one that wins. Like, there's a pro-abortion access and an anti-abortion access, so it's kind of getting crazy out there. But New York is really important. The fact that New York is such a progressive state and it doesn't have the protection of the Constitution is worrisome.
Election Day is November 5th. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with Assemblymember Deborah Glick. She's the chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee in the State Assembly, and we spoke about plastic reduction and the act that she sponsored that failed to pass in the Assembly last session. She says it will pass in 2025.
It's passed in the Senate. They'll have to pass it again, but we are going to get that across the finish line, as well as a bigger, better bottle bill. We have seen the proliferation of so many other products, sports drinks and teas and coffees in a multitude of different varieties, and that they have to go somewhere, and they wind up going into landfills because there's no return on them, and that's a problem. So, you know, we are, as I say, the disposable New York has got to shift our priorities and be more sustainable.
Absolutely. And I also think it's interesting that on, you know, you have to check what the number is on the underside of a lot of these plastic bottles and containers. And, you know, say we can recycle in my hometown, for example, number one and number two or whatever the numbers are. And we use that to decide. But we need to come up with a plan to recycle it all, don't we?
Well, I think the reality is that we have to stop using most plastics except in very specialized medical devices, etc., because most of your listeners may or may not know, if they've listened to Judith Eng, they know that really the only recyclable plastics are one and two. The rest are, you know, the plastics industry putting one over on us. So we need to not allow and understand the plastics industry is an offshoot of the petroleum industry. And they are going to, as we use less fossil fuels, they are going to produce more plastic. And we cannot afford that. We have seen all of these stories now proliferating about microplastics and how they have invaded our bodies. And we don't know what the health implications of that is yet, but we can assume that it's not good because plastic is made of scores of different chemicals.
That's Democratic Assemblymember Deborah Glick. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed six laws aimed at reducing gun violence. The Democrat was joined by former Arizona Congressman gun safety advocate Gabby Giffords for a bill signing ceremony this week. The latest actions by the governor come as her office says gun violence is down 47% since she took office in 2021. To learn more about the new gun laws and how the state measures gun crime, the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard spoke with New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services Commissioner Jackie Bray.
Governor Hochul has made public safety really central to what she is doing as governor. And we all know we just cannot thrive as a state if we feel unsafe. And during the pandemic, obviously, gun violence across the country, including here, rose. And as you said, it's now down 47%. When we say gun violence, what we mean is a gun crime that leads to injury, right? So if there is the use of a firearm and it leads to injury, that's gun violence. And that's sort of the simplest way I can say that. And when we look at sort of the progress we're making, you know, when we say 47% down, that's in New York City plus these 28 other jurisdictions where we've invested significant dollars to reduce gun crime. And we've done that in multiple ways. Some of that is in programs of violence interrupters, which are folks that go into communities to reduce retaliatory violence. Some of that is in employment programs, because you want to make sure that young people who might, you know, find themselves in situations where they, you know, get in with the wrong crowd, have other things and productive things to do. Some of that's investment in law enforcement. And so Governor Hochul's really taken an all of the above approach. But when we say gun violence is down 47%, what we mean is that the number of gun crimes, the uses of guns that lead to injury, is down 47% since she took office.
So let's look at some of the specific pieces of legislation that was signed by the governor yesterday. One of them is requiring firearms dealers to post a warning at the places where guns are sold. And to me, this is similar to if you go to a convenience store and you see posters on the wall warning of the dangers of cigarettes. Is that the same idea here?
Same idea. You know, I grew up, you know, walking into delis and walking into bodegas and, you know, seeing the warnings. And if you buy a pack of cigarettes, you're going to see that warning. We all know how bad it is to smoke. And it is really bad. It is really dangerous, I should say, to own certain types of guns. It's really dangerous to own guns when you don't have proper storage. And we want to make sure that New Yorkers know that, you know, really terrifyingly, you're more likely to be killed by a gun in this country than you are in a car accident. Our kids are more likely to be killed through gun violence than they are through disease. And, you know, those are things that consumers should know. And so these signs, exactly like for tobacco, are to warn of the dangers of irresponsible gun ownership. This isn't about responsible gun ownership. It's not about people that know how to use guns and you know, have the right licenses and have the right permits and have the right training and have the right storage. It's about making sure that we're warning people of the dangers of what having a gun can do to you and your family.
So another bill that was signed by the governor would ban what are called pistol converters, to basically transform a semi-automatic pistol to fire bullets more rapidly. This comes after the Supreme Court in June struck down a ban on bump stocks. Is this legislation meant as sort of a workaround or a back to the drawing board after the bump stock ban?
Well, here's what I would say about that. You know, I'm the Homeland Security Commissioner, right? And often when I deal in violence and gun violence, I'm talking about mass violence, unfortunately. And if you look at the two instances of sort of large mass violence in New York State in 2022, we had one on the New York City subway in Brooklyn, and we had one in the Tops supermarket in Buffalo. And no one died in the former, and 10 New Yorkers died in the latter. And one of the big distinctions there was the type of weapon used. It is just simply so much more dangerous when you have weapons that can fire at such a rapid clip. There is no, you know, outside of war, There is no reason New Yorkers need to fire weapons in that way. And so this is absolutely meant to make sure that people cannot retrofit legal guns to do things that are already illegal if you were purchasing it in the first place.
Another piece of legislation is meant to modernize the state's red flag law. What can you tell me about the red flag laws that are on the books in New York, and why do you believe they were in need of updating?
We have nation-leading red flag laws, and that's really thanks to our governor. After the terrorist attack in Buffalo in May of 2022, our governor, and this legislature passed new, stronger red flag laws. They are the best in the country. They've been used 22,000 times to make sure that people who really should not have access to deadly weapons don't have access to deadly weapons. It's up about 1,300% the use of these since the governor took office. But, you know, we're making some changes here. One, we're making a registry so that we have all the data in one place, so that it's accessible to all of our law enforcement agencies. Two, we're making it smoother for our local law enforcement agencies to seek these what are called extreme risk protection orders, or, you know, sort of seek the red flag designation, because these red flag laws work. They're working better in New York than they're working anywhere else, but we can always improve.
Now, what about safe storage? I see one of the bills in this package also is related to the storage of firearms at home.
Yeah. Listen, I think that the vast majority of Americans and New Yorkers who own guns want to be responsible gun owners. I mean, I think we should be really clear about that. And I think this governor is really clear-eyed about that. And so a lot of this is about giving people the tools and the information they need to be responsible gun owners. That's about posting the signs, like we said, the tobacco-esque warnings. It's also about making sure that when you get licensed to have a pistol, that you are provided immediately upon getting licensed information about safe storage. When I go to the pharmacy and I pick up a new medication, I get 3 pages of information about how to take that medication. When you get a pistol and legally are able to use that pistol, you should get information at that point about how to use that pistol safely. And part of that is storage. And so we're going to make that required here in the state.
So Commissioner Bray, I want to turn to the hurricanes that have swept through, most recently Milton down in Florida, but just a few days ago, Helene, which swept up through the southern U.S. What is New York doing as far as mutual aid goes in assisting with the recovery efforts that will be underway after Milton and the ongoing recovery from Helene?
Yeah, man, my heart breaks watching what's playing out in the Southeast. North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, and now Florida again. And, it's early the day after Milton, and we're not going to know for many hours the full extent of that damage. And these storms are getting bigger, and this is becoming a new normal. And what that means for someone in a job like mine is that we all are going to have to pitch in, that it would be unreasonable to assume that North Carolina would have the resources in state to deal with a flood of that type of biblical proportion. And so states across the country, but really New York in a big, big way, are stepping up to send mutual aid in. We have nearly 300 people at this point from the state deployed to the Southeast, about 220 deployed to support operations around recovery and response from Helene, and about 65 or 70 deployed to support operations in terms of response to Milton. Those are in a bunch of different types of teams. We've got 3 Swiftwater rescue teams that deployed. We have 2 what we call incident management teams. These are teams that go in to help, you know, relieve sort of burdens on the emergency managers there. The state incident management team has been embedded with the city of Asheville, North Carolina, which we've heard so much about. They've taken over what we call points of distribution, which is basically setting up places where people can come and get water and people can come and get MREs. New York City's got a team that's embedded out in North Carolina doing certain, you know, similar things at the county level. And so, you know, we're really, what we have said to our counterparts down there is anything you need. We've got four 100 kilowatt generators that are camped out in Georgia right now, powering things like hospitals and water treatment. So I think that given the strength and the scale and the scope of these storms, you know, we're all just pitching in.
Commissioner Jackie Bray of the New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thanks so much. Good to talk to you.
New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services Commissioner Jackie Bray speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Wall Street profits increased more than 79% in the first half of the year compared with the same period last year, and annual profits are expected to finish the year much stronger than 2023's mark. That's according to a new report from New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. The Democrat tells the Legislative Gazette's Ian Pickus the upward trends will help boost state and New York City tax revenues.
Well, it's, you know, there have been a lot of macro changes that have benefited this industry, the securities industry in New York City, obviously coming out of the pandemic and more stability with the economy. All of the money that the federal government has pumped into the economy in recent years. I certainly think more recently why we're optimistic this trend will continue, the interest rate cut. You know, all of this certainly has been benefiting the profit levels. But I would also add the word of caution that there's still a ways to go before this year closes out. We know we live in a challenging geopolitical climate with everything going on with world events. And let's just say a fair amount of uncertainty in our own country with the national election, you know, not too far away. We'll see what that all means. But certainly in terms of profits with the first half of the year being so strong, that's positive news. You know, folks need to keep in mind when Wall Street's doing well, the taxes that we derive for New York State, for New York City coffers as well, it really is what helps to fund all the other important parts of the budget, like school aid, support for health care, senior programs. You know, so we really do depend on the profitability of this industry, not only the corporate profits, the business profits, the taxes that derive from that, but the personal income tax revenue. These jobs in this industry, very well compensated, and therefore taxed accordingly, and the rest of us benefit when they're doing well.
Right. So this report notes that the securities industry contributed 19% of total tax collections in the state fiscal year 2023-24. So if things are on the upswing, as this report suggests, what might that mean for New York State budget makers in the new year?
Positive news, and actually that percentage, we've seen that percentage go up in recent years a bit, and I think that at least as we're projecting, if the profit levels hold up as strong as they have been for the first half of the year, that will also mean the bonus pool for next year will probably be higher than we've first been projecting. Again, still time for this year to play out. We don't put out our report on Wall Street bonuses until March of the following year. But I think that means there's more upside possibility in terms of more revenue coming from the securities industry than have been anticipated. And I think the fact for at the state level, you know, we will start the new budget cycle with a budget gap. This could help to make that more easy for us to close that gap.
So what's been going on in the past few years? Because obviously it's been a whirlwind since COVID, as you say, and 2020 had an unprecedented impact, and then things kind of leveled off recently. Now 2024, or at least the first half of the year, as your report notes, things are way up. Is this increase, you know, a flash in the pan, or is this just how things are going to come?
Well, we see the profit level as kind of going back to pre-pandemic levels, although it is a bit higher, no question about it. But I do think it's suggesting that we could be on a pattern of sustained growth and growth that we could count on. You know, we look as well at the employment numbers, and certainly for 2023, where we do have full year data, we actually saw an increase in the number of securities jobs in New York City. There's always a concern, are we losing these jobs, you know, to other parts of the country? What's happening is that there is greater growth in these finance jobs in other states, but actually New York has not been losing the jobs. Our growth has not been as high as other states. So I first would look to keeping those job numbers stable. We'll see how the rest of 2024 plays out. Hopefully we'll see an increase in employment. It's too soon to tell. But I think that's an important part of the picture as well. What are the employment numbers? You know, there's no doubt there's more growth happening in other parts of the country. But still, the place where most of these well-paying jobs are located, it's still in New York City. We're still the global capital for finance. We certainly want to keep it that way.
That's New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Ian Pickus. And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2441. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.